700 years before the birth of Jesus, God delivered a word to a group of people who were in the midst of a struggle unlike any other. He did it through a prophet, and he sent this prophet to these people to call them to repentance, to tell them that there's hope, to assure them that in the midst of the losses and the struggles and the painful realities of the world in which they found themselves, that there would be a light that would break through. That the light would come and would shine in a way that the world had never seen before, and it wouldn't be limited just to the world that they knew, but would extend beyond anything they had ever imagined before. That all peoples, everywhere, would see this wondrous light. And one of the things that he said through this prophet, 700 years before its fulfillment, was that when the light shone into the world, it would do so in such a way that the darkness of the world would provide a contrast that would cause it to stand in sharp relief to all that history had witnessed. What was fulfilled on that first Christmas night remains just as true and real today, this Christmas morning. Reminds us that what Christ has done and how Christ has brought so much into this world, that we live in a world that is filled with darkness, in a world that is under such great struggle, and a world in which we find ourselves often facing the dilemmas and the difficulties and the hardships, in a world where it seems death remains ever present and ultimately inevitable. And yet in the midst of this darkness, hope. In the midst of this struggle, life. And in the midst of the uncertainty, assurance. He said it like this through the prophet: "The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light, and those who dwelt in a land of deep darkness, on them light has shone." They couldn't even begin to imagine it. And yet they wouldn't have been able to draw or turn away from it. What a hope. What a promise. What a welcome relief. But he went on and he didn't just speak of the light. He spoke of grace. Listen to what he said. "For to us a child is born, and to us a son is given. And the government shall be on his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." The grace of God is on display in the promise that came 700 years before its fulfillment. In fact, if you pay attention to the scriptures and you read through the history of God's interaction with man and his redemptive purpose being carried out through all of that time, you will find over and over and over the grace of God. How do we see it here? To us, a child is born. To us. For us. To us, a son is given. For us. He didn't give us someone that was going to demand of us. He didn't give us someone that was going to rule over us in an oppressive way. He didn't give us someone that was going to remain distant from us, a servant that would serve only the wisdom of above, but to do so in distant royalty. He gave us a child. He gave us his son. We often do our Christmas celebrations on Christmas Eve after the cantatas. So Christmas Eve day in our household is kind of crazy. And this year was certainly no exception. And so we had that that whole crazy day. And then we came here last night, and actually yesterday afternoon, and we had the cantatas and the traditions, and we got to see everybody, and we got to have all of the greetings and everything that has become so much a part of our experience through all these years. And then we did what we always do. We went home and we ate too much. And some of you, by the way, if you think I look a little bit overweight today, it's your fault. Quit giving me candy. If you don't want me to eat it and you don't want me to the result that comes from it, then don't give it to me. I have so much wonderful, delightful, delectable candy. Then what would you do? Well, we got to make pies to go with it. We had a wonderful time. All day long, all day the day before, for weeks now, my grandchildren come in and they look at the packages. They count them. I know they're doing it. They don't admit it, but they're doing it. They can't wait. Finally, last night, after we ate, we sat down, we opened presents. I love getting presents. I love giving presents. I enjoy the time, but there is nothing that can compare to the delight that is seen in the eyes of a child. Nothing. No matter how happy, how blessed, how full we may feel, there's still room for more from that childlike faith. When God wanted to extend His grace to us, He did it in a way that wasn't so theological that we couldn't understand it. He did it in a way that was not so doctrinal that we were repulsed by it. He did it in a way that wasn't so distant that we were unable to reach up to it. He did it in a way that was so familiar that we couldn't miss it. He gave us a child. He gave us His Son. For unto us a child is given, a son is born. What a powerful promise. But it isn't just about grace. He also took away from us the burden of fear. The government will be upon His shoulder. The government. We think of it in one way. The Bible thinks of it, I think, in a little different way. You and I have a distinct difference of opinion from what Scripture assumes, and that is because we live in a society in which government and spirituality are separate. So we talk about it, the separation of church and state. That was never done to protect the government. It was done to keep the government from imposing spiritual realities on its people and to allow for the freedom of people to choose to follow and serve God according to His leadership in their lives. But because of that, some people have taken that and carried it to a ridiculous extreme and have made it such that government and spirituality can never cross paths. And the reality is, without spiritual truth, there can be no justice and there can never be any righteousness. The very foundation for good government. The Bible, on the other hand, knows no such thing of such a separation. The king was always chosen by God and was obligated only to Him. And so government and worship were all one and will be again. That's what this says. The government will be on His shoulder. That means the responsibility for the welfare of people in a physical way, in a way that provides protection, but also the provision, in a way that ensures prosperity and hopefulness, all of those things that are intended by good government, as well as the liberty and freedom to explore and become who God has made us to be in His own image, all of that is assured. Not because of us, but by His gracious gift of a Son upon which that role now rests. 700 years before the birth of Jesus, the King was promised. And He would come. And He would not come to oppress, He would come to deliver. So that everything that we long for and desperately need, we find in the fulfillment of this promise through Jesus. But not only does it speak of his grace, not only does it assure us of hope and promise in governance, but it brings us directly into contact with God. There are four names in Isaiah 9 that speak of the Messiah and help us to understand who Jesus really is. But all four of them are not names as you would refer to me as Scott, but rather titles, more like some of you call me Pastor. Pastor isn't my name, even though there are some who never call me anything else, and that's fine. But for Jesus, Jesus is his name. Here, his titles are given to us that help us to understand not just his role, but his purpose, his plan, and how we interact with him. And so when we look at this, it is all in a process by which we are being brought to God in a very personal, intimate way. The light has shined in the darkness. A child has been born, and the grace of God is given through a son. The government and all of the things that we rely upon for our continuation now rest upon him, and he is to be called Wonderful Counselor. His first title, Wonderful Counselor. The word wonderful means miraculous. It has a spiritual connotation that demands God's intervention. It isn't wonderful if it isn't from God. And it is because it's from God, because he is from God, that he is wonderful. The next time you use the word wonderful, I want you to remember that in the biblical usage of it, it carries with it a supernatural intent that reminds us that the wisdom that we need in order to understand who we are in the midst of the world that surrounds, and to have hope and direction and a fixed gaze of faith on that which is to come, is given by our Wonderful Counselor. But not only is he the Wonderful Counselor, he is also Mighty God. Now the word mighty carries with it the victorious one who stands before his protector of all things. And so he is more powerful than whatever it is that is opposing you today. Whatever oppression you feel that you're under, whether it's a physical thing, whether it's an emotional thing or mental thing, whether it's a relational issue, whether it's some sort of loss that you've experienced or that you're anticipating, maybe it's a struggle that you didn't want, that you know that you don't deserve necessarily, that you're now walking through without any idea of what the outcome will look like. All of these things that bring this weight of oppression upon us, he says, as he stands in our stead, I am your mighty God. Nothing can overcome. Nothing can defeat. When Jesus comes, he comes as the Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, and the Everlasting Father. Isn't it interesting? This is one of the few places in the Old Testament where God is referred to as Father. That's not how the ancients thought of him. They might have even considered it somewhat disrespectful. But when Jesus came, he taught us to pray, Our Father. Over and over, as he cried out to God, he did so, Father. He brought us into a relationship that moves beyond mere religion and one that speaks at the very depth of the foundational experience of family. Everlasting Father. You know, and the danger of me doing a message like this in a setting like this is the storytelling. I mean, the danger to you. I'm not going to do that. But how do you go through these experiences, especially in holiday seasons and where family is such a feature of what we do, and not think about generational issues and think about those kinds of things? And so when we speak of these kind of family connections, it's one of the things that I like most about our church is that we are less religious and we are more relational. So that when one hurts, everybody does. When one struggles, everybody experiences that in praise. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. But look at your own immediate family. Are they perfect? Are you perfect with them? No, of course not. It is in the midst of the brokenness and the challenges and the struggles and the hardships and the changes and all of the transitions, it's in the midst of that, the only thing that we can cling to and that we can call to mind is that in spite of it, we remain family. It is the image of the eternal, for he is our everlasting Father. And last, his title is Prince of Peace. Brad read the passage from Luke 2. And as the angel concluded, before the glory party took place, with the heavenly host, there is the pronouncement and the promise of peace on earth among those with whom he is pleased. What is it that pleases God? Hebrews tells us that without faith, it is impossible to please God. But with faith, God is pleased. He doesn't want your performance. He doesn't want your accomplishments. He doesn't want your stuff. Already that belongs to him. He wants your trust. It is in trusting God. It is in the relationship with God that faith is confirmed and focused. And it brings a pleasing, relational comfort that signals to the spirit and the heart of every believer that we are at home with the Father and we belong to him and no one can take us from him. And what do we experience in that moment of awareness? Peace. The world can be coming apart at the seams. You can be standing on the last dry stone as the rising waters surround you. And yet in the midst of such turmoil, we can remain ever fixed in peace. It may be momentary, it may be fleeting, but you can always return to the anchor of your soul. And there you will find peace to sustain you and grace to guide you. And the assurance of one to govern you, and a God who loves you and has given everything for you.